Welcome to the Lobby Pod. This is a very exciting experience for me. We get to talk to Meredith Weisel. She is the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, in Washington, D.C., which I can't imagine having a more relevant, poignant, purposeful position than that. Meredith has been involved in federal, state, and local governance and public policy issues for 20 years. I won't date you, Meredith, but she has been a remarkable persona, a policy expert that people have been dealing with in Maryland and D.C. and the whole greater capital region on any issues from real estate to now for the last several years representing her community and really what I can't imagine being a more important role. Meredith, welcome to the Lobby Pod.
Thank you. And it is more than 20 years. Is it? I will date myself.
Meredith and I got our start together at the Greater Capital Association of Realtors. She brought a balance and savvy and smarts to what was otherwise a Damien O'Doherty experience. So we're grateful for all that. Hey, just talk to me about this rally that occurred in Washington, D.C. I'd love to hear your point of view as a professional, but also as a passionate promoter of the great values that come out of the state of Israel.
So I will come to it from this perspective. The past now almost 6 weeks have been really challenging, I think, for a lot of people in the Jewish community and just the greater community after watching or hearing really what happened on October 7th, you know, a brutal massacre in Israel. And a lot of people have been doing a lot of things in various communities, and there hasn't been a collective group, certainly throughout cities. We've had people do rallies and vigils, and it has been amazing. But to come to DC with close to 300,000 people from across the country was an incredibly powerful experience. And I will tell you, having my 15-year-old with me was really probably the most impactful thing of it. And seeing the youth there and them lifting up their voices and remembering that I was actually there in 1987 for the last time there was a big rally like this at 12 years old. So now I dated myself with my dad on a bus from New York for Soviet Jewry when there was a horrific incidence of anti-Semitism going on there. And so here we are all these years later, and to see everybody collectively come together and to talk about the fact it's not just standing up for Israel, it's standing up against anti-Semitism that we're seeing across the world, but particularly here in the United States. It was just an incredibly powerful experience, and the positivity that came out of it, not the negativity, but the positivity, was really something to see and to hear.
Yeah, let me, I'm not sure our whole audience might get the size of that rally. So just, yeah. There are 16 million Jews all across the world. It seems like 7 million maybe in Israel, 7 million in America, maybe 500,000 in France. So we're talking about 250,000 Jews in the state of Maryland. So yep. To have a number like that, 300,000 is, you know, relative to the size of the community globally, is just massive, isn't it?
It is. I mean, look, Jews are, as you said, we're a really small percent of the population. In the United States, it's only about 2%, and it's like 0.2 worldwide. So to understand that, and to understand also to put the numbers in perspective, that when you look at the amount of hate crimes, not even bias incidents, but which is larger, but hate crimes, when the way the FBI classifies it for their statistics in religion, Jews or anti-Jewish hatred is more than 50%. So we're one of the smallest religions. We're also an ethnicity. We're also, you know, culturally for a lot of people, the way that they look at it. And yet we make up one of the largest. So for people to come together, and there was also not just the amount of people in there in person, there was well over, like, I think 500,000 people who viewed it live streamed across the country.
That's so, like, what I did.
That's there you go. And like, that just shows how many people have been hurting and are were looking to find a way to voice their opinion, to voice what they've been feeling, to come together. I randomly ran into a person who I went to college with, who lives in Cleveland with her daughter, like in all of that sea of people. Like that's the dynamic. People just were seeing, people they know from all over there. And because we are such a small part of the population, and there was such a large presence there, it wasn't just to the Biden administration to say, like, this is what we're asking for you. It was for people to feel comforted and to know we're not alone. And I will tell you, there were a lot of allies that were there too, and that was amazing also to see.
Also, the messaging that you don't hear on the mainstream media because they're just incapable of nuance. But when one of the hostages' mothers was up there giving a very powerful talk, she reminded the world that 25 other citizens from 25 other countries have been kidnapped. I mean, this is a global attack in a sense, and it stuns me that the media covers it as sort of Israel Palestine when it's really Hamas, going up against the world, and we're supposed to sit back and watch it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on the media coverage and maybe how people like me that are interested in these issues, that want to be allies, or people that just want to have hear a fair shake on both sides. Like, where do they go to get media? Where do they go to get information? I thought that was really helpful for the cause of justice to have that event, because it forced people to hear these points of view that we just don't get on the mainstream media.
Yeah, so her name is Rachel Goldberg. Her son is Hirsch Goldberg, or Hirsch Pol Colin Go Goldberg, and he actually has ties here to the DC region. Some of his
Wow.
family lives in Montgomery County, and so a lot of
Wow.
us, yes, so a lot of us know like some of his family members. Hirsch was at, just to tell his story real quick, Hirsch was at the music festival with some of his friends, and he was seen on video. That's how his family knew that he was taken hostage. He is seen on video that Anderson Cooper with CNN actually found the video and shared it with his family. And he is seen with one of his arms blown off. So he's clearly in need of medical treatment. And Rachel has, I don't know how she does it as a mother, but she has been giving speeches all the way from the UN to other communities. And the message she has is not just about her own son, but the fact that there are 200, over 240 hostages from actually over 30 countries. And then it is not just Jewish people, it is not just Israelis. There are people from other countries who were visiting Israel, doing work in Israel, agricultural work on the kibbutzes, who were taken hostage. And it seems that people have forgotten them. And after October 7th, which, as I said, was one of the most brutal massacres we've seen since the Holocaust, October 8th, the narrative changed. Israel is now going into Gaza, and Israel doesn't care about a humanitarian crisis. And so that is the narrative we have seen shift in the media. And we need people. ADL and other organizations have toolkits on how to make sure that the message is correct in what is shared. There is a lot of propaganda. There is a lot of misinformation and disinformation. And to say that you can trust information of numbers and details that Hamas, a terrorist organization classified by the United States, the EU, and many others, and you're relying on information from them as true, and putting that in mainstream media, that's not okay. That is, you are promoting propaganda. And we have seen that from a lot of media. So I would urge people to go to more neutral media sources, hearing from people directly on the ground. And that is where you need to get better information. And that's a really important aspect, because look, Israel is in the middle of a ground offensive right now in Gaza. They didn't start this war. This, we know Hamas provoked it through a brutal attack, and they have every right to defend ourselves. And you want to talk about nuance of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict? That is a debate that people could have for days on end. But
Right.
If people are calling for a ceasefire and not asking for the hostages to be released, that's concerning. Like you've forgotten about them. There are people who have had 200 empty seats, more than that, every Shabbat weekend. Their families' empty beds, children as young as 9 months old. Like that's not okay. And that's what we need to remember here. And I will just say this and I'll turn it back to you. Look, there's a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Nobody disagrees with that, but Hamas is responsible for that. They started this, and their only goal is to eradicate Jewish people and Israelis. That's what people have to remember here.
Well, I got to tell you, when I saw Hirsch Goldberg's mom that talk, I identified that with any one of my friends or their wives, and that's why I said I got to call Meredith, because I really heard, I saw you when I heard her voice, and I saw Joy Seibel and Joy Bennison and all these wonderful women that I've befriended over the years, and I could just hear all your voices through hers. And that's what precipitated this podcast. You know, it's tough for me to tough for me to say this, but because I'm not the biggest fan, but I may be changing that. But Hillary Clinton did an amazing job on The View, right? Like, the inside joke here is I ran a super PAC against Hillary Clinton, and then Meredith worked for Rick Lazio in her earliest years. So, but to hear her.
Oh, how far we've come.
How far we've come. That's all right. But to hear her talk and just sternly remind people that there was a ceasefire on October 6th. So,
Yeah.
like, I mean, you know, and that ceasefire was like, it's okay for rockets to come across and hit Israeli communities. We're still going to call that a ceasefire. I mean, I just don't understand why. I don't. What I found most offensive is that the data that came out on anti-Semitic acts, I think across the globe and across the country,
Yep.
you know, they spiked on October 8th. They spiked, you know, relative to the prior years. And so before Israel was even in Gaza with the offensive or the defensive work there, you know, there was massive hate crimes going on all over the world. And it's just like, doesn't that tell you enough?
Yeah,
It's stunning.
the past few years have been consistently increasing. In 2022 was the largest number of anti-Semitic incidents. And I say incidents because not everything under the legal definition, as a lawyer, you know, we have to say this, under the legal definition rises to the level of a hate crime. But bias incidents, anti-Semitic incidents, still give you a context of the patterns we're seeing in the community. Things like graffiti and vandalism, flyers being thrown out, people physically being attacked. 2022 had well over 3,600 incidents across the country, which is the largest number on record since ADL started recording in 1979. There's been ups and downs over the years, but 2022 hit the highest. Before October 7th, 2023 was already trending to be higher, and now it's going to be even more so. And Maryland, to bring this home, state of Maryland was the 10th highest number of anti-Semitic incidents in 2022 in the country. And I will tell you that I had a conversation when we were getting ready to release the data with Governor Moore so that he was aware, because he was new in his job. And I was like, just so you know, this data is coming out, and I want you to be aware of what we're feeling. And he came out with a very strong statement to condemn what we were seeing. He called me. He talked through the data, and he himself has been really, really supportive in outreach to the Jewish community. And since October 7th, we just released the data, which is probably what you've been looking at, that is a 316% increase from this time last year. So, meaning the time period in 2022 to the time period in 2023, the numbers from last year, from October 7th to basically today, and last year from that time period, it's been a 316% increase. 832 anti-Semitic incidents of things like assault, vandalism, harassment, which, if you want to put it in perspective, is like 28 incidents a day. That is quite alarming. And that is here in the United States what we're seeing. Synagogues being targeted, Jewish people being harassed just for being Jewish. They don't stand up and say, "Hi, I stand with Israel," or "I care what, you know, Bibi Netanyahu is doing." They're just being Jewish, and they're being targeted because of that. That tells you this is not just about Israel and Israel's right to exist. This is about terrorism and the impact we're seeing it on all people who are Jewish around the world. That is alarming, and everybody should be standing up against that. That is not okay.
What about our best and brightest in America's colleges? You're a lawyer. You went to American University for undergraduate school. What's it like for you and the community to see, you know, these institutions that have, like George Washington, that have clamored for dollars and donors in the Jewish community for decades, and then, you know, you wake up and you're watching, you know, anti-Semitic tropes and pro-Hamas language, you know, splayed across the buildings of these American higher education institutions. I mean, what does the Jewish community feel about that?
So, look, we just talked about the numbers of anti-Semitic incidents, and this honestly has probably been felt the most on our campuses. So Jewish students themselves have borne the brunt of severe incidents, everything from assaults, intimidation, harassment, not just somebody exercising their free speech, which I believe through and through, like, you want to stand out there and yell "Free Palestine," more power to you, but to go and target a Hillel building, which is an organization on college campuses to cultivate Jewish life, celebrate Jewish holidays, participate in interfaith work, but to go and graffiti it with "Free Palestine" or harassing students there, it's concerning. And what it tells us is that there is a lack of understanding on campuses of the nuances of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There's a lack of understanding of who the Jewish people are. And there are professors who are out there yelling and spewing disgusting and threatening and anti-Semitic tropes about Jewish power, Jewish control. You know, Jewish people are the ones who are donating to all these campuses, you know, trying to say that Jewish people, again, are all powerful and controlling, which is a conspiracy theory and an anti-Semitic trope. And the problem is anti-Semitism is based in conspiracy theories and stereotypes and tropes that have been passed on for millennia. And our kids on campuses who, you know, they are learning about their education, they are coming into their own, are conflating things of American history versus the Middle East and have a lack of understanding that a majority of Israelis are not considered white people. They are, and that is, most of them are color, like they are darker than you and I, and don't understand the dynamics related to that. And they are viewing things through a very different lens of oppression, and don't understand why Israel was started in 1948, understanding that Jews have been kicked out of countries for millennia just for being Jewish. Jews from Iran are not white Jews. I am a white presenting Ashkenazi Jew who has heritage is from Eastern Europe, Russia, Hungary. It's very different where my family grew up and came to the United States. It is not the same for everybody, and that Jews are not a monolith, and they don't understand that dynamic. And so that is why we are seeing challenges on our campuses, because of a lack of understanding. And also a lack of that anti-Israel rhetoric can bleed into anti-Semitism, and also a lack of what Zionism is, and that Zionism is the right of Jewish people, self-determination to the ancestral homeland, where we do have historic ties to there, along with other people. I'm not saying Palestinians don't, but to understand that dynamic, and that's manifesting incredibly on our campuses right now.
Meredith, if I say that, I don't even mean to flatter you, but if I say you are made for this moment, which you are, talk to me about how your career in and around the Capitol, your upbringing sort of informs you about this moment and this experience. Just love to hear a little bit about kind of how you got to where you are and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so I actually said this to somebody 2 nights ago. I was in Baltimore with a bunch of incredibly powerful Jewish women involved in a couple of different organizations and in the community. And what I said to them there that night when they asked how I was feeling, and I had a lot of feelings, and I said, I feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. And I did not necessarily have a linear path here. So as you said, so I'm born and raised in New York on Long Island, very active in the Jewish community, came to DC for college, went to law school, worked always in government and politics, community relations, the realtors. But I also have my personal life always been heavily involved in the Jewish community. And I had an opportunity after doing some work to work for the Jewish Community Relations Council, which I did for a few years, and then was asked and recruited to come to ADL. Because of my background in advocacy, in community relations, and understanding the dynamics, and also understanding the Jewish community and fighting back against all forms of hate and discrimination. And so, as I said, it wasn't exactly linear, but being here in this moment tells me this is where I am supposed to be and where I need to be for the long haul. And seeing and being there in the community and doing trainings and working with our legislators, particularly our non-Jewish legislators, and talking to them about anti-Semitism and how something like anti-Semitism is, we call the canary in the coal mine, because it does lead to other forms of hate. And making sure that when we see a rise in anti-Semitism, we also understand it causes and leads to other forms of hate. We have seen a huge increase in anti-LGBTQ plus hate the past few years. We've seen a huge increase in anti-Black racism, in Islamophobia, and that there is an intersectionality with all of that. And that when we are seeing right now, we also know that it can impact other communities. And to me, that means I am in the right place because I feel comfortable talking about this, educating about it, advocating for increasing our hate crime laws, making sure that faith-based institutions are protected. You know, we've seen a lot of increase in white supremacy the past several years. They are having a field day right now. White supremacist groups and right-wing extremists are loving this, that they see the way they perceive it, the Jewish and Muslim communities are fighting. We have seen what we call anti-Zionism, and explaining what that means to people, that anti-Zionism essentially is at its core believing the state of Israel should not exist. So to educate people when they say, well, I just don't agree with the Israeli government, I don't agree with the Israeli government on a lot of things, doesn't mean I don't believe Israel should not exist, and that has been bubbling up in our academic spaces. So to understand that it comes from all of those aspects, I feel comfortable talking about the nuance, whether I'm in a room of 1,000 people speaking or 10 people, and trying to just have these conversations and breaking down barriers. I feel like I was trained for this moment from probably when I was 12 years old at the march in 1987 with my dad. That was my path to be there. And seeing what my kids are facing now and giving them the tools and seeing how the younger generation is speaking up in a lot of different marginalized communities is a very powerful thing. And I want to make sure I'm continuing to empower them so that when they are my age, hopefully it's a little bit different. I don't know, but I hope it is.
I got a tough question for you.
Sure.
As you know, I'm a long time Democrat, was a trustee of the Maryland Democratic Party for a long time. Do I have a problem in the Democratic Party? I mean, it seems like we are a significant portion of our voters are off the rails and in the wrong place on this issue. Maybe through ignorance, maybe through just some sort of like uninformed activism and virtue signaling. But we've got a friend, Ken Allman, who is going to be the head of the Democratic Party in Maryland. And you should see some of the stuff people are saying online. I mean, he's the most unifying person of our generation in Maryland, and even he in Maryland, where we have more Jewish people per capita than most any other state. I I just wonder if we got a real problem here in the party. And I'd love your sort of Washington, D.C. point of view on that.
So we have a problem, period. It is not Democrats, it's not Republicans, it's not independents, it is everybody. We're not going to get into where I personally am. I am very different than I was 25 years ago. I am not where I was.
Neither am I.
and where I am personally registered and stuff like that anymore. It is obvious to a lot of people how I am not where I was back then. And that's also because the Republican Party has changed tremendously also. So we are seeing a lot of challenges in our political system. And I would start with this. Look, hate and bias, anti-Semitism, or whatever other form of hate, are a nonpartisan problem, but they require a bipartisan solution. And we have seen the polarization and the politicization over the past several years impacting both parties. There are extreme factions that are growing tremendously on both sides of the aisle. The center, where you and I probably still are, is like far and few between right now in general. And so the Democratic Party has problems, the Republican Party has problems, and we are not seeing leaders within those parties calling it out within their own party. So when they see somebody who says, Israelis are harvesting in Palestinian organs, which is blood libel and a conspiracy trope, and you see an elected official or a teacher, which is what happened recently, allegedly say this, and they don't call it out within there and say, that's not okay, that's not true. There are some who are. I want to be very clear. There are some who are, but there are many who are not. Or when we have a congresswoman who says Jews have space lasers and cause wildfires in California, and the leaders in the Republican Party don't call that out either, that's the problem, because all it does is amplify that individual. So the answer is we have a problem in both parties who are not condemning terrorism, which is what in this moment that we have. They are completely ignoring there are 240 hostages. They are completely ignoring there's a rise in anti-Semitism. And we are seeing that within, and it is both parties, although right now when we are seeing some of the challenges with Israel, some of it is more within the Democratic Party, certainly. And what that leads me to is a lack of education amongst some of them, or lack of caring, or thinking it's only one side. And that also just, again, is a problem. It is a minority within both of those parties, though. The problem is they are very vocal. And so what we have to do a better job is to Ken Ullman or to whoever's in charge of the Maryland Republican Party, which I don't even know right now. Like, they need to be having frank conversations to understand you can have nuance. You can care about the Palestinians. I care about them.
Of course.
But you need to understand also that this is the impact this is having worldwide. And here in Maryland, we are seeing tremendous increases in incidents because people are just Jewish. That's also what they need to do. So I would ask the leaders to be bringing in various organizations, including ADL, to come and teach and talk about this and to understand what we're actually seeing and what we can be doing better as political leaders. We need them to use their bully pulpits for good, not amplifying the hate we're seeing. And unfortunately, the amplification of hate is coming from those minorities within the party.
I think we both think Maryland is a special. I know you represent the whole region, but yeah, just because this is Center Maryland, I think Maryland has a special relationship, whether it's like the Barry Bogages and Hannon Bean Seibels, who really did like economic development missions for decades. Like,
yeah,
Maryland is deeply invested in the state of Israel. Coke disruptive technologies, many companies all over the country are investing in Israel. It is a remarkable economic development story, and Maryland's had a big part of that. Can you talk a little bit about that special relationship between Maryland and Israel?
Yeah, I mean, look, we have had, thinking back the past few governors, the administrations have been phenomenal in understanding that Israel is a thriving democratic country in the Middle East, and the technology that they have, that they've developed. I mean, everybody who has an iPhone, some of the technology came, that was developed in Israel, and things in your computers, and just understanding the way that they also have done agriculture there and their economics. And that's why there have been trade missions. And we have had people who have gone there to learn and how to bring back some of those things they've learned here to help Marylanders thrive and do better in our communities. And that has always been the case. It is not just because of our large Jewish population, between Baltimore and Montgomery County, some Howard County in there. I mean, like, it's the DC metro area is the third largest Jewish population in the country. And then you add in Baltimore. I mean, it's like we are up there and understanding the thriving community, but understanding a lot of the how it impacts other communities and the work that Israel has done. Like I said, the agriculture, the solar stuff, I mean, all of that. And so we have also, Governor Hogan, he helped push through an executive order related to BDS, the Boycott, Divestments, and Sanctions movement, that we saw people trying to say, we should not be participating with Israel. We should not be supporting Israel in any way. And Governor Moore has committed, saying he continues to believe in that, even though there are people who've tried to get rid of it. And so we have seen the ties, and also we have a large Israeli population in Maryland too, who comes here to work and to live. And so helping support them as well. We have seen this in the legislature through the entire General Assembly. We have seen this in the administration. We have seen this from an intelligence standpoint as well with our law enforcement and understanding how to recognize terrorism. So it's all throughout. Maryland is a leader in this, always has been, and I think always will be. And this is both, we've seen it in Republican and Democratic administrations here, from Republicans and Democrats within the General Assembly as well, who have all said this is a country we want to make sure we're supporting and doing work with, from economics to, as I said, to agriculture to technology, you name it. And it's phenomenal to see, and it's very heartening.
As this last question for you,
I'm
Meredith,
sure.
as a national leader in exposing extremism and delivering anti-bias education, can you talk to me about what you would say to those young campus leaders, Hillel leaders at University of Maryland or Colorado College? I know one. What can you say to them? What would you say to them? I'm sure you are speaking to them, but what do you say to these young campus leaders that are the future of Maryland, the future of the country?
So I would start with this. I would say to all students on campus, not just Jewish students, don't believe everything that you read or see on TikTok. Don't believe everything you read or read on every social media channel, but we know most of them are getting their information from TikTok, and everything is not. There is misinformation and disinformation out there, and they need to go to better sources or to ask who are more reliable sources out there. And that is something that they can ask a lot of long organizations that have been around for a long time. ADL has been around since 1913. We dispel a lot of the, as you said, in extremism, we dispel a lot of the misinformation that is out there, the disinformation, the propaganda, to get to what really is happening. And so that's what I would say. One, two, leaders on campus, do better, talk more with the various communities. The Hillels on campus are doing amazing. Ari Israel is the rabbi at Hillel on in Maryland. The Chabad rabbi, Eli Blackman, they are phenomenal. They are working with students day to day to, one, feel safe, feel empowered, feel protected, giving them talking points, how to talk about the nuances of what's happening. This is not easy. And I think students are still learning. You're talking 18 to 21 year olds, maybe some are 22. Like, they don't have the bandwidth to understand all of this. So talk to organizations. We can help you. This is what I do professionally. We can help you, give you talking points. Talk to leaders in the Muslim community on campus. Try and have conversations to understand you are all there together. Everybody has the same goal, but to understand how things like from river to the sea is not a good phrase to say, because it means the eradication of half of the world's Jewish population. They don't know what that means when they are chanting at half these students. They just don't know. They yell, river to the sea, free Palestine. They don't know. It's a chant. It's a slogan. They don't know the impact of their words. So to Jewish leaders on campus, they can help dispel those myths and the information that's out there. I would say to be reaching out to the university presidents. We can help lift them up. I was just actually, I cover North Carolina. So I was at Duke. We were meeting with the university president, and then I met with students after, and I told them, here's who you can talk to. And if you can't get to them, you call me. I will get you in that room. And that is something that we want them to continue speaking up, because the reality is they are living on campus day to day. I am not living there on campus day to day. I have a freshman in college who was at JMU. She went down to Virginia. And I tell her, if you see anything on campus, I know the university president. I will call them. I will get you guys in front of a room with them. Like, students need to use their voice, because they're the ones who are there day to day. And that's what I would say to the leaders. You can be there, and don't be afraid to be who you are and be proud of being Jewish on campus also. It's so, so important, because right now so many are afraid to do that.
Meredith Wiesel, she's a national voice for the Anti-Defamation League. But she's got a Maryland heart, home, and a New York fighter spirit, right? We are very glad you are where you are today, and looking forward to your continued leadership. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm going to do a plug for everybody. If you want to catch up on all these issues, I listen to Dan Senior's Call Me Back podcast. Mary, you have any podcasts you want to recommend, or any media resources?
Yeah, there's a few. So there's one, if you're interested in the extremist activity, it's called Extremely. Our vice president of extremism, Oren Siegel, does it. It is amazing. It talks about a lot of the what we're seeing happening right now. So that is one. There's also, if you go to ADL.org, there are a couple of other places on there. My colleague in New York actually runs a podcast for ADL as well. His name is Scott Richmond, and he's talking about a lot of the things we're seeing in the community. And so those are two, and they're both directly on our website, linked there under media and press.
And how do people find you, Meredith?
Me? I'm all over social media. So I am on, so you can search my name on Twitter. I do, or X, or whatever it's called now. I am on there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. Those are all public. And I do post a lot of information on there. So if you just search my name, it comes up very quickly.
Man, that's Meredith Wiesel. Thanks for joining us so much.
Thank you.